And we've been talking with Wilbur Allen about his documenting of UFO cases, and also we're taking your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Generally, what's the reaction, Wilbur, when you send your photographs, your work, to Stanton Friedman, Dolan, Jaime Maussan, the Hoaglands? What's been the reaction? Of course, we know Richard's.
I get positive response, only for the fact that the photographs themselves are of exquisite quality. And, you know, when you have a quality sample, it becomes a little different ballgame when you make a submission to certain people. And interestingly, I used Newfork, Peter Davenport's website, to substantiate a lot of the anomalies in the photograph. And you can just back up all your data with other reports that are on the market right now and feel confident that what you photographed is definitely consistent with these reports, and know that it's a UFO anomaly. We don't have technology like this.
No, not at all. Now, take this question in the spirit that I give it. You're a professional photographer. People who don't know you might say, this guy might be playing around with these photos.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I get a lot of that. I get a lot of people saying that the material is CGI. I get a lot of people telling me that the material is Photoshop. But then you start to wonder, well, okay, if it's Photoshop, then tell me how Photoshop works. If it's CGI, which program was utilized to generate the effect? And then, you know, it becomes a different ballgame, because you know automatically if a person is not versed in that technology, they can't answer those questions. But they'll use that as advice, and a lot of people want to use that as advice. And I'm not going to tell you that I'll go places and start talking about UFOs and see the reaction of people around me laughing as if it's a laughing matter, when the realities clearly indicate that it's not.
Are you still traveling, going to conferences and other events?
I do, and I go to some conferences, and I'll give my presentation. And sometimes the reaction, the absolute silence, sometimes is unnerving. But it seems that, you know, why go to a UFO conference to get scared? And I seem to scare people.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, when you were at the X conference in D.C., invited guest, or did you just, you know, buy a ticket to come in?
Well, I did quite buy a ticket. I used my old ABC News credentials to get in.
The old press pass.
Well, you have to. You know, I mean, I was a member of the White House press corps, so quite naturally I feel I should have access to the press club.
Sure.
And I do, and it's not an issue getting in into the press club. But it was interesting that in most cases, a lot of people who are talking about this don't necessarily have the physical documentation to substantiate their discussion or argument, while the physical data does exist, and they overlook it or choose not to look at it.
How were you treated there?
I was treated very well, especially by the media and some of the participants there that looked at my material. And Steve let me show my stuff there to the people as they left, but not necessarily during the conference itself. But it was still, nevertheless, an opportunity for me to at least attempt to show the realities of the matter that do exist.
Very good. Let's go back to the calls. Casey in O'Fallon, Illinois. Hi, Casey. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George. Hi, Mr. Allen. Good evening.
Hi,
I hear it's hotter than Hades out there.
Oh, man. You have no idea what it's like in your old stomping ground. We're having people dying in Granite City. It's awful.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to tell you a story, a true story, about the most scared I'd ever been.
Right.
It was July 5th, the year 2000. I'm getting pulled over in Shiloh, or January 5th, sorry. And, you know, I was 16. I'm in the process of getting taken in for breaking curfew laws, you know. And all of a sudden, the cop just says, kid, go home to see your mom. And then, you know, he's looking behind me, and the triangle floated over. And I freak out. I'm like, no way, I want to go with you. He's like, no, go home, go now.
Was that day?
Yes, it was that
when the Milstead officers were chasing it. Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, and it went through Shiloh too, and it was officer. I shouldn't say his last name, but we're still friends. We talk about that day all the time. And I'm wondering, Alan, on your Blu-ray disc that you're offering on your website, I'm wondering if you have any triangles on that. I've got, in fact,
samples of rather large triangle that was imaged from Lower Senate Park during the 2002 encounter I had at the U.S. Capitol building. Absolutely.
Alan, I cannot tell you how big this thing is. I'm still scared thinking about it today. And to be honest, I think it was something that came out of Scott Air Force.
Well, that's what we theorized, but this was huge. This was almost like a mile long, wasn't it?
It was impossible for it to be United States military. Impossible.
I know. You couldn't store the thing.
Impossible.
It was scary, George, and it made no noise at all.
I was on the air on KTRS at that time. And we were getting these stories, and I was trying to find these Millstadt police officers to try to get them on at that time. I was getting calls from people, but I couldn't get them. But it was an incredible story.
Oh, man. It was crazy. Like, I have goosebumps still to this day. I was 16 years old.
Gosh.
And I'm coming back from taking, 11 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. He's about to take me in, and he just said go home, and I'm like,
wow.
Saved by the UFO.
Wow.
Oh, man. And I still talk to the officer to this day. It was so late at night, not many people really believed us. They didn't believe how really truly big it was.
All you have to do is Google UFO, Millstadt, Illinois, and you'll see an incredible story.
It's true. Can you give me your? I'll buy your DVD, Alan. I really want to know more about
it's on Amazon.
Okay, awesome. I'm ordering.
How do you find it? How do you find it, Wilbur?
You just go to the Amazon page and type in UFO forensic files.
UFO forensic files. Okay, very good. Casey, thanks. Appreciate it. Out there in O'Fallon, Illinois, which is across the river. Across the Mississippi.
Illinois is a UFO hotspot.
St. Louis, it sure is. Let's go to Eddie in Hawaii, first-time caller. Aloha, Eddie, go ahead.
Aloha, George and Wilbur.
I got to get used to that.
Yeah.
Go on out there.
I have a couple things. I wanted to, before I forget, I wanted to mention to, I think the tail gunner who called, the older gentleman, William. He said he really wanted to see something, and I just wanted to make the suggestion to him. I hope he's still listening. He should try the night goggles, because they really do reveal.
They do. Third generation.
Yeah. So, William, if you're out there, get some. I'm sure you
use them.
Actually, the Russian night goggles are what you really want. Yeah.
Don't buy them. Just get a friend, because they're pretty expensive.
The Russian ones.
Is that it?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
The Russian night, is that the third generation? Is that what those are?
They're Russian technologies. Clearly more advanced, but it's kind of hard to get. But the Russian night vision technology is definitely a recommendation.
Oh, I see. Wilbur, I was wondering if you could clarify something for me. You were talking about earlier when you said that you were photographing the gentleman in the water and that the anomalies kind of landed in the water behind him. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but and he turned around. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
And you said he was startled by it, or he was unnerved by it. But how did he see it? If these were moving at this high speed,
these particular objects. See, keep in mind when you're talking about high speed photography, we're talking about daylight hours, and high speed photography is not effective in the nighttime hours because you need a shutter speed that will allow you to absorb the amount of light that's present on location.
Right.
So, both the images in the U.S. Capitol building in 2002 are film samples using 1,280 ISO film and rear curtain technology, meaning the camera took an ambient photograph first, and then the strobe went off second to supplement the subject himself. But the objects in the water were moving at a reasonable velocity, not necessarily super fast. And if it was moving fast in the water, it would have left a wake. It didn't leave any indication at all that it was submerged in a reflection pool.
Oh, wow. Did you ever see the Star Trek episode where they were moving at there was one set, half the crew on the ship vanished. And people kept hearing like these gnats buzzing around them.
Exactly. Hyper-accelerated intelligence.
Exactly. And that's what that reminds me of. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's a reference exactly to that.
Yeah. And George, I wanted to also tell you that I saw something very similar to the 90-degree turns that you saw, those ones up in the sky. I was driving with my father across the Alligator Alley when I was 15. It's a long, straight road that goes across from the west coast of Florida to the east coast.
Okay.
And we looked up in the sky, and on the horizon, we saw these three lights that were spread out across the entire horizon, like one on the left, one about in the middle, and one on the right. And that's, I mean, that had to, it had to have been hundreds of miles apart, each one of them. And they were moving perfectly in sync, and they did exactly that same thing. They did these crazy 90-degree turns where they would just stop, turn, go
in
different directions.
Yeah, it's baffling, isn't it?
And then they zigzagged, and then they went shot straight out and just disappeared.
I've got a sample of two orange anomalies that were above my home that did 90-degree turns, and as they turned, they left etches in the sky of a glowing orange signature.
Still shooting for the National Geographic, Wilbur?
Yes, I am.
What are some of your favorite assignments?
Well, it's a little different with me at Nat Geo because they acquired my portfolio, so they're selling the material from the portfolio. My assignments are whatever I submit.
Okay, so you've got to go after it first, I guess.
Exactly. They've acquired the material that I already have.
Well, photography's fun. It's always been
selling intellectual property, exactly.
Yep, it really is. This, and you're right, these cameras are absolutely incredible these days. But you know what? I kind of miss film. Now, there's a lot of people listening to this program right now. They don't even know what film is.
Well, Hollywood uses film cameras, so film is not dead.
No, it's not dead. I mean, they still love 35.
And there is film on the market that has higher resolution than digital.
The high-definition video looks a little flat to me, doesn't it to you?
Well, it's flat, but see, if you understand photography, you could make that really snap by utilizing polarization and other filtration to give it a little bit more
roundness.
Texture, exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely, but I don't think they're ever going to be able to beat that look of 35.
It's different in photography these days. In film, for example, I had a library of filters that I utilized to generate my film samples. But in digital, it's no longer required because it's just the changing of the color temperature of the camera itself. So it's a little different, but optically, the applications are still the same. And if you do use film technique, for example, you can make your digital images just look extraordinary.
Do you have these huge telephoto lenses?
Actually, I don't use that at all.
Really?
Not at all.
I always used to see these photographers with these things. They look like
you're
cannons.
Talking $9,000 and $10,000 lenses. And, you know, with a lens like that, you'd have to have a specific clientele, and there's not many people that want super telephoto images.
What do you think has happened to, and we're going to take some other calls in a second here, what do you think's happening to the camera business when everybody has a nice camera on their cell phones?
Well, that's not going to happen because then it would require the cell phones to have a massive amount of storage capability. And I've got Android, and it takes pretty decent pictures, but it can't come close to my Nikon or a Canon. It just can't touch it.
You know what it really is? These cell phone cameras are for the social networks. People who take quick pictures and post on Facebook or something like that.
Well, that's not Nat Geo, and you're not getting broadcast quality. So, you know, even though they claim it's high definition, it's not the same as a sample taken with a D700 or D3S. It's just not the same.
If you had a picture of a UFO on the White House lawn, a craft, actual craft, do you think they'd run it in National Geographic?
Yes and no.
What's the no part?
The no part is there would be, and I do have people there that want to believe that their lens flares. And just for example, the sample from Lower Senate Park with the green objects in the sky, if those were lens flares, then I should be able to take the lights on the ground and invert them, put them in the sky and match the location of the objects in the sky. But when I do that, it doesn't match. So you get people who want to think that, and the other thing I get are people who take lines and they draw the lines from the ground to the objects in the sky. That's totally illogical. Because if you know how reflection works, especially in photography, it would be an inverted sample, equal but inverted.
All right, back to the phones we go. West of the Rockies, it is Mel in Vancouver, Washington. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, yeah, long-time listener and first-time caller.
Well, thanks, and I'm glad you got through.
Yeah, me too. I worked for the FAA for about 35 years. When I started in 1960, they had centers, aircraft centers, in Pittsburgh and D.C., and they all talked on landlines back and forth. And I was, they had some tapes that they used to tape these, to tape the controllers, and they closed down the center in Pittsburgh, moved it up to Cleveland. Well, in the process of that, they had a lot of these tapes left over, so I was able to catch a couple of them, and I took them home with me, and my dad came down one day, and they were reel-to-reel half-inch tapes, and we were running through them, and we happened to hit across to where that you were talking about that over D.C. in 50?
Yeah.
1952.
UFO flap then.
Yeah, that UFO flap. And we actually heard the controllers talking on that back and forth through their through Pittsburgh to the Washington Center. And
that was Howard Cochran, by the way.
What?
Howard Cochran. He was the lead air traffic controller in 1952.
Oh, yeah. So anyways, we listened to them talking back and forth, and it was real interesting. They were on there for about 10 minutes. And I guess they talked to the whole dang Eastern Seaboard. But it was interesting, and that made a believer out of me. And then after what I've seen on radar screens in the last 35 years, it's made a real believer out of me, and I'm just happy that I could tell you about this one right here.
And have you ever had, Mel, pilots calling you saying, we've seen these things?
No, I was a technician. I wasn't a controller. But I have heard pilots calling in saying, when I was in the Air Force, we had, we actually scrambled two F-104s. Up into the sky, and they kept going and going and going for a UFO, and finally they got high enough, and the pilot come back to the controller. He says, do you know that is Venus that we're chasing? So yes, I've heard them talk about that too.
Do you think it was Venus or something else?
Well, myself, I think it was something else. See, when we had one show up on the radar scope, and I think George had it on there a while back.
See, I don't think Venus shows up on radar.
I think he did that to cover himself, because it's not quite something you want to report when you're an aircraft pilot, you know, in the Air Force. They look down on people who made those kinds of reports.
Right.
So he tried to keep himself in check and not lose his job.
Yeah,
so
you come back and say we were chasing Venus. End of story, right?
End of story. In the story.
It's a way to do it. Okay, thanks for that. Wilbur, UFO Forensic Files, is that a book, too, or is it a DVD?
It's a book and e-book and a DVD.
All right,
and
your website?
Paperback e-book on Lulu, and the DVD is on demand, or you can buy the DVD on Amazon.
And you really are a no-nonsense guy. I've been reading your website over the past week and a half. You're straight facts, aren't you?
I try not to veer from facts, because again, it would make me look like a fool, and I would have plenty more people on my case telling me that I'm a fool. But in this particular case, you can't dispute comparative analysis of objects that are exactly the same.
All right, well, stick around. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, Wilbur. Thanks for sticking around for so long as we talk about your work, UFO Forensic Files. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we may leave you softly, but we're going to be right back tomorrow on our next Coast to Coast show as we talk about hauntings with Marianne Winkowski. And then it's Full Moon Friday, open lines, so anything will happen. We'll come right back and take final phone calls with Wilbur Allen and you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Wilbur Allen. Your calls, final calls. Wilbur, Richard Hoagland during the break sent me pictures that your dad took at the Clark Air Force Base. Absolutely riveting.
I have to agree. I was taken away by the samples, too. And I've got to acknowledge Dr. Bruce McAbee, because Bruce has been totally influential in helping me do the analysis on my samples.
Tell me about the note your dad left you, if you can. Wasn't there something tied in with all this?
Well, he was adamant about me not showing the material to the powers that be, because I do believe that in his career in the United States military and the Air Force and in intelligence, that he had encountered objects that were not of earthly origin, and that he maintained those secrets. And he knew more than I anticipated that he would know, just based on his reaction. He just did not want me to show those pictures. And, you know, it was kind of late at that point, because I already submitted the materials to several people, and it just happened to hit the fan, you know.
What do you think those objects were that he took?
I couldn't tell you, other than, you know, from what I saw, and I was raised in an environment on military bases, which a lot of my friends had black lights in their rooms and black light paintings. And when I noticed these anomalies in the air, they were almost like nuclear green, like black light paint. And I'd never seen anything quite like that. But what was even more interesting were the thousands of smaller anomalies that the objects were discharging into the air.
Okay, back to the calls we go. East of the Rockies, Paul in Cypress, Texas. Hi, Paul. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, George.
Good. Good to have you with us.
It's the first time I've been listening for a lot of years. I listened when Art Bell was still running it.
That's a long time ago now.
Yes, sir. Thanks. Yes, sir, it is.
Okay, Paul.
My question is, you talked earlier about that you saw this object come down and do a stop, and did a 90-degree turn, and just burned off. And do you remember that?
Yep.
All right. Anyway, it was on that instance. I've seen that three times now.
Out that way?
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, it's baffling, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very intriguing, that's for sure.
I mean, I don't know if we have any planes, Wilbur, do we, that make 90-degree turns?
We have nothing that can do that at all. And even if you start looking at collective pitch technology, which are helicopters, they're close to it, but not quite the same. It's a totally different application with a helicopter. We have nothing that will do a 90-degree turn.
And I guess, Paul, it just took off after that, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it did. It came down. It's kind of slow, and it came down. It stopped, and then it just burned off. It just took off, you know, and that was it.
And we have nothing that goes that fast either.
No. I mean, you know, I can't see any man-made aircraft that's able to do that.
If we did have it, do you think we could keep it a secret?
No.
Impossible. Exactly. They couldn't keep the stealth bombers a secret.
They're hacked into the Pentagon now these days. I'm
exactly
sure they'd tell us what was going on. Paul, thanks for the call. But there's got to be a reason, Wilbur. Let's assume that these objects are coming from other planetary systems. They're coming here for a reason. Whether they seeded us 400,000 years ago, who knows? But they're still coming here for a reason. You know, what do you think of the hybridization program, making little hybrid babies?
I think it's a reality because, again, what I encountered when I awoke in wherever I was, what I saw looked like humans that had made it with aliens. Hybrids.
So, are they doing it to bring them back to take over and get rid of us? Or is something going to happen to the environment?
Well, I think it's natural evolutionary process, but not necessarily natural to Earth itself, but natural to the universe to cross-populate.
Maybe they're dumping them on other planets?
Exactly.
Let's go to Mark, Schenectady, New York. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Hey, I called in before and told you that I'd been abducted for a year from 1960 to 61, and I, too, had gone through the, Wilbur, I've gone through the hundreds of nosebleeds, and I've heard that snap, and it's what I've come to find out is wherever I go, I can take pictures and I can see UFOs. I actually got the identical UFO, looks like a gaseous planet, and it's right in the middle of the picture, taking a picture just east of Albany in the Peterson Pass, the mountain pass between New York State and Massachusetts. This is in 1990.
Is that near the old Mohawk Trail?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
But I also got the same exact picture flying over the Sierra Nevada mountains when I was going out to Los Angeles to do a film for Honda back there in 1990.
Huh.
And I got the same exact picture, and I got a picture of, when I went to Chichen Itza in 1990, I got a picture of like 15 UFOs.
Same.
Notice everyone is tagged that's getting these photographs.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all the same.
Exactly.
And
it's consistent.
Are you still seeing this, Mark?
Well, wherever I take a picture, I can. The thing is, when people look up in the sky and they see the cloud, just a small X, little bit of a cloud, just look at the dark blue part around it, and you can actually see a craft. The crafts are there. If they weren't, they're always there. They've been there since the beginning.
What do they want, Mark?
They want us to know them, I think.
Well, they can do it in an easier way, can't they?
Well, not really. When you think about, if an extraterrestrial should land, one of the things you'll go for is your shotgun.
Well, most people would.
Absolutely. So would you land here if you were E.T.? I don't think so.
All right, Mark, thanks for the call. Let's go to Alan in Anchorage, Alaska, wildcard line. Alan, thanks. Go ahead.
Hey, Jordan, how you doing?
Good.
Good show tonight.
Thank you.
I just want to throw some things out there for Wilbur. I've been waiting a long time because I don't have enough information for what I want to share either, kind of like Wilbur was talking about. And I've been waiting for a good show to kind of put this out there. But anyway, I have things that are connected to my eyeballs or from somewhere, but I can see them projected out through my eyeballs. It's like a tube or a bunch of tubes. And this one tube has a four-leaf clover-looking thing on the end of it, and it has a light in the middle of it, or a circle in the middle of it, and it has a light that flashes on and off every once in a while. And it's like it's taking pictures. If I read a book, it's like it's scanning the letters. It's like little lights going in and out of the letters.
Like they know what you're reading and everything
exactly.
else.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like they're watching things through me. It's like I'll be talking to somebody, and it's like a blue light will flash off sometimes, like a glass cube, a white light sometimes. Sometimes it's black, but it's like they're taking pictures of things that I'm looking at.
You're like a human video camera for them.
Yes, and I believe that 100%. And I keep waiting for more information, because I hate even talking about it because it's hard to explain to people.
That's
right. You know, it's like, just make this assumption for a moment, Wilbur, that there are 15 monitors up in a spacecraft connected to 15 human beings, and they're watching things that they see.
That's exactly what's going on.
That is weird. Krista in Chino Hills, California. It's your turn. Hi, Krista.
Hi, George.
Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Allen.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm so excited. Great, good. I'm glad to be here tonight to share my story.
Okay.
So I had a weird occurrence happen a couple of years ago that kind of woke me up and got me looking into UFOs and government black ops deals.
What happened to you?
Well, I was sitting on my patio about 10 o'clock one night, really dark. It was probably a no moon night. And speaking with my girlfriend who lives about 10 miles away, she was on her cell phone. And all of a sudden, a beam of light just shined on my table. It just, like, it was like a light switch flipping on. And I said, oh my gosh, there's a light. And she goes, my friend on the other line, on the other side of the phone said, there's a light on my table. There's a light on my table at the same time that I was saying it.
Weird.
Wow.
We both had this beam of light. It was kind of like about 5 feet wide in diameter.
Almost like a helicopter spotlight without the helicopter.
Well, that's exactly what I thought it was. And I quick got up off of my chair because I was under a patio cover. And I went to look out, and I lived next to a freeway. And weird thing, there was no freeway traffic noise. There was no noise in the sky. There was no helicopter, a couple stars twinkling, and that's about it. But on the other line, while I was, checking the sky, my friend was still freaking out about her light on her table. And it just kind of switched off real quick. It was probably on my table for about 30 seconds, circled around, and then just flipped as soon as it, just like it came on, it went off. And we were convinced that it was UFO, but I don't know. I I just, with all this stuff with the government going on, who knows what it could be?
Who knows?
But that, you can't assume that it is the government, though. That's the really ironic part of it. We always want to have an idea as to who it is, but chances are it's far from the government's capability to do that.
So true. Hey, thanks for that call, Krista. Let's go next to Tom in St. Louis. Welcome to the program. Hi, Tom.
How you doing, fellas?
Good.
I've got two quick questions for your guest tonight.
Sure.
And first of all, I'd just like to say I'm listening to you on the Big 550.
You got
ATRS
it.
ATRS in St. Louis.
The old alma mater.
And my first question is, I'd like to know if the author tonight, your guest, is has had anything to do with the Ouija board or known anybody that's been involved in any kind of witchcraft or anything of that nature.
No, I don't. I'm specifically UFO, and I have done some research in paranormal activity and do have some paranormal samples, but no, I don't endeavor in that, and I don't necessarily agree with what some people believe are the after effects of a Ouija board.
So, well, that kind of shoots down my other question or relates to it. I was going to ask you if you feel there's any coincidence between the UFO sightings and the pictures you have in Washington, D.C., and any nefarious activity with them and our government.
That's hard to say, and that would be speculation on my behalf, but I know that I have the physical samples, and I've presented the physical samples, but other than that, it would be impossible for me to say what their intentions are, or why they were there, or that they were negative, or that they were positive. I can say that none of the encounters that I've experienced were ever negative or hostile. So, and I'm here to show you the samples. Other than that, I can't really say anything.
Thanks, Tom. Why don't they simply say to Congress, cut the budget and settle the debt? They won't do that.
It doesn't work like that.
They don't get involved, do they?
At all.
It's not going to be like the day the Earth stood still, is it?
Not quite.
We're not going to.
But it's interesting that in that film, the samples are consistent with reality.
Well, that's true. Let's go to Valdosta, Georgia. Elena, hi there.
Hi, George.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. And hi, Wilbur.
Hi there.
I was listening earlier while I was driving, but I was listening to, I guess, some childhood experiences with extraterrestrials.
Yes.
And I have an experience I'd like to share as well as a question.
Okay.
When I was about 6 or 7, I saw, actually it's pretty much specifically, 6 or 7 years old when this happened, but I would see a lot of things that were unexplained. But one notable occurrence was I was laying down to go to sleep, and there was one window in my room, and my room at the time was actually a converted laundry room that had been converted into a little room for me. And there was an outside light that, I could see everything outside the window that was close to the house. There was this figure. It was humanoid in shape, and it was shadowy, but I could see through it, but it was dark, and it was definitely a humanoid shape. And I wasn't scared of it at all. I didn't feel nervous about it until later on, but I'll get to that. I called my parents in there, and I showed it to them. They, of course, did not see it, and I even drew an outline, a good couple of feet away from the window of the shape, and they're like, oh, you had a nightmare. You should go back to sleep. Well, shortly after that, my lights turned off. Mom and Dad are back in bed. And I'm not really sure what this means, but there was a toy box that was next to my bed, a really big, heavy wooden toy box. And all of a sudden, I look down at my toy box, and there is what appears to be a kitten that is being squished by my toy box, and it's screaming.
Jeez.
Pretty much. It's meowing like it's in pain.
Wow.
And the figure is still there outside of my window. It hasn't moved, but I got the feeling as if it was some kind of retaliation for me trying to show adults what I was seeing. And I also had the feeling like my reactions were being monitored. So all I did is I just laid as still as possible, and I tried not to think about it. And that, I've thought about that night a lot, and I used to think that maybe it was some kind of, you know, specter or spirit, but recently I've begun to think that perhaps it was some kind of alien that was, you know, trying to monitor my reactions or something like that. But my question is this. I've talked to a few other people who have had similar experiences when they were about the same age, and if there are these aliens that are trying to make their presence known, or either they are trying to monitor us in some way, do you think that they are like honing in on children or some other form of, you know, human person that could be easily discredited? I mean, in our society, we discredit children's experiences constantly.
That's exactly what happened to me as a child when I mentioned to my teachers in third grade that I'd seen aliens, and
they laugh at you.
They selectively pulled me out of the group of normal children and introduced me to special education.
Just because of that?
Yes.
Wow. And you never stopped talking about it, though, did you?
Of course not.
Was it difficult or easy for you when you were a youngster?
Well, keep in mind, when I was a kid, I'd never heard or seen aliens, and Star Trek was not necessarily on the air yet. So for me, it was a little different because I was not sure exactly what I was looking at. So it's a little different, you know, to surprise a child with something that's as abstract as an E.T. It's almost mind-boggling because in most cases you develop a phobia.
That is something else. Well, my friend Wilbur, thank you so much. It's a great night with you tonight, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
And what else can we do for you? You just were a phone call away, okay?
Thank you.
Wilbur Allen, his website, ufodc.com. His book is out there, UFO Forensic Files. He's got a DVD as well. But just go to his website and take a look at some of the remarkable things he has done. Don't forget, Full Moon Friday. Open lines. For Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.